are back. You're listening to You Would Think, the Philadelphia Flyers podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Conlington. Joining me today, it's the one, the only, the legend himself. It's Mr. Mike Gioletto Sr. How are you?
I'm doing great. How's everybody doing out there? And it's great to be called a legend in my own time.
Or, hey, man.
Or in my own mind, one or the other.
Listen, it's one or the other, and I'm okay with both. You're getting to legendary status here.
Awesome.
You know,
awesome.
Anybody over a certain age, you know, just kind of has a little bit of legendary status, whether they've earned it or not.
Okay. I think that's fair. Plus, when you're right as often as I am, it's hard not to get that legendary status. That was just a joke.
Are you going to bring up Alex Ovechkin, or what are you right about? I don't understand.
I'm right just about all the time, except when I go, you know what? I was wrong. When you hear me go, oh, I was wrong, then you know I wasn't right. All the other times, I'm right.
And one of the places he's always right is on Twitter. And you can find him on Twitter at Mike from S Jersey. You can also find producer Mike at Mike_Gioletto and the show at YWT Podcast. You can also find the show on Facebook, Instagram, Podbean, iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, SportsTalkPhilly.com, all over the place. How'd you like that transition, Mike?
That was very good.
It was nice and smooth.
You got us out of a quagmire there without all the plugs in yet. That was good.
Exactly.
I got to say this. You're good at what you do.
Well, I appreciate that. You are good at what you do.
You carry the show and push it forward, often taking the show where it needs to go, and they're taking me where you want me to go. So, no, you're very good at this.
Well, I appreciate that. And if any producers are listening, yes, I am available for interviews. And no, I did not ask him to say that.
And aren't you glad I'm always right now?
What's that? I didn't acknowledge that point, but I might have to.
But you'll concede I'm right on this time.
Let's go to the Flyers.
Absolutely.
Let's go to the Flyers.
Since we're a Flyers podcast.
Right. We had a little bit of an interesting week. The Flyers played 4 games. We talked a lot last week about those 2 Florida games, and the Flyers absolutely took care of business in those 2 games. The other 2 games, the Islanders, Tampa, not so much, and we'll get into those. But let's start with that win at home against Tampa on Monday night, or against Florida on Monday night. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it was you won. You had to win those 2 games to put a little separation, or you really needed, not had to, but I'm not saying they were more important than the Islander Tampa Bay games, but they were.
They felt like playoff games.
You needed to put some separation. Okay,
yes.
Between, you know, put them, you know, not that they're out of it, done completely, but now they got to really go on a serious run to get back to you.
The Flyers did deal the Florida Panthers a severe damaging blow this week.
Absolutely. They now need an 8-1-1 run, something like that, to get
stealing,
back.
Stealing 4 clean points from them this week. The Florida Panthers are currently 5 points behind the Flyers as we record this on Sunday morning before the game's on Sunday.
All right, so if we do a 6-4 spread, which isn't anything stellar, you know, they got to go 8-1 to get back, or 8-2, 8-1-1, something like that. That's not easy to do.
No, and they still have to jump the Carolina Hurricanes on the way.
Correct.
Because the Hurricanes are only 2 points behind the Flyers. We are also going to talk pretty heavily on this show about the upcoming week, because there's 2 huge, huge, huge games on the Flyers slate this week against the Columbus Blue Jackets, who are in action later today after we record. Against the New Jersey Devils. But beating Florida is kind of that first hurdle, and you help put yourself a step above that competitor. You kind of help push them down the ladder.
Correct. Again, it's tough to win 8-9 in a row unless you're Tampa in this league. It's really hard to do.
But then the next night you go into Long Island. I'm sorry, the game was in Brooklyn because they don't know where they play.
They're the island. They're still the Islanders, so we'll say they played on the island of Brooklyn.
Well, no, but they only play in Brooklyn half the time. It's bizarre.
Yeah, it's a strange situation.
Anyway, the Islanders were feeling good.
That was the killer game of the week.
Yeah, and you had 3 goals. The Islanders scored 3 goals. Really, before the Flyers knew where they were.
I don't totally agree with that. The reason I say that is they weren't dominating the game the way you normally dominate a game to go up 3-0. I thought the Flyers were on their skates. I thought they were quick. I thought they were playing well. Not to get too cliche, but it was a bounce here, you know, a pass that happened to make its way through there, a seeing eye this. it didn't feel play-wise that they should have been down 3-0. And I even said to Mike, we're watching the game, I said, this game is not over. I don't know that they tie it. I don't know that they come all the way back. But the way the Flyers are playing, this game's not over. They're going to be in this game.
Yeah, and it really honestly felt...
And it happened.
Yeah, it felt like the Flyers were playing great. The Islanders were capitalizing on the chances that they got.
Yeah.
And it's hard... And I will give the Islanders a lot of credit. They played well defensively. And their goaltending showed up excellent in the first half of the game.
Yeah, and that was Mike's response when I said that the Flyers had a chance in the game and they'd still make a move.
It's tough to score 3, 4, 5 goals against the Islanders.
They're so good. And as we said, they're so good defensively that I don't know if they can. I said, I'm not saying they're going to get there. I'm saying this game's not over. It's not going to be a 5-1, 4-1 final. The Flyers are going to make a game of this.
But it kind of felt like it. And I was also talking to Mike at the time. It felt like it because the Islanders are so good defensively. You know, up 3-0. You know Barry Trotz is not going to let them sag off. You know he's not going to let them back down and play poor defense. He is going to demand the best out of them, and he's gotten it out of them all year.
And he has.
That's why they're ahead of the Flyers in the standings, and they locked it down defensively. And then this game they didn't.
And I don't think it's anything. And I don't think it's anything necessarily that the Islanders didn't do. I don't think they shelled or went into a shell. I don't think they did all that. I think the Flyers were just playing well. They made it 3-1. They're they playing hard. They got that
got a clutch goal from elite sniper Robert Hagg.
Well, they got the what the Gene Hart often referred to as the Flyers score the proximity goal.
Okay.
So they got that one to get the 3-2. And what really made it a killer is it wasn't like they made it 3-3 halfway through the third period and then the Islanders scored a late one to win the game.
No,
it was late. They just tied the game, goalie pulled, empty net, 3-3. Yeah, we're going to overtime.
And that's exactly the problem.
And you thought
everyone went.
I don't think they sagged. I really don't. It was just one. Because I honestly, I walked into the kitchen to get something.
I think they ran out of gas.
There's a difference. They literally scored with like a minute 3 or 58 seconds, something crazy.
Yeah, and it took all of their energy.
Well, you figure
and they ran out of gas. You figure
points are so at a premium. Neither team is going to try to then take any chances in the last minute. Let's get to overtime, the other way. Let's guarantee our point. Go to overtime and try to get two. That was my thinking. I went to the kitchen to get something to drink.
Especially with how defensive the Islanders are.
Correct. And it wasn't anything the Islanders did to score the goal or anything the Flyers didn't do. It's a puck that, again, it had eyes, but Elliott just has to save that puck.
You would have liked to see a save there.
You just have to save that puck.
Yeah, and I don't want to give Brian Elliott too much of a hard time.
No, he's been everything we could have asked for him to be this year.
He's been great for the last month since Carter Hart's been out.
Yeah, no,
in the first period, listen, I can't say that he should have gotten all three of the goals. He's got to get one of them.
Yeah. No, it wasn't his best game. But
none of them were strong enough that he didn't have a chance on them. He's got to make one of those saves. And if he makes one of those saves and you're down 2-0, it's a whole different game.
All right. No, look, unless you're one of the greats of all time or Jonathan Quick in his 3-year, 4-year run, no goalie's great every night.
Okay. I agree.
So he's been everything we could ask for him to be this year as the 1A guy. No, but that... If you say why did the Flyers lose to the Islanders, the biggest reason why was Elliott. That's just true. That's not giving him a hard time. It's just true.
Yeah.
It wasn't his best game for a few different reasons. And that late goal, you just have to stop.
Yeah, and you can say that critically without being critical.
Without being unappreciative. I'm not being unappreciative.
Acknowledge that Brian Elliott was the reason the Flyers did not win that game and still acknowledge that he played well and that...
And he's very much part of the reason why we're still in the playoff picture.
Exactly.
100%.
Brian Elliott has earned some benefit of the doubt with a lot of the fan base this year.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, now that Carter Hart's back, he was back in the cage Thursday night against the Florida Panthers.
Played very well.
And played very, very well. And you saw the Flyers, again, respond really, really well
on the road.
A bad loss.
Right, that second Florida game was on the road. Hart on the road.
James played very well.
James
Van Riemsdyk scores less than 5 minutes into the game.
He had a terrific game. Yeah, he had a terrific game.
And then at the end of the first, the bottom six gets it done. Pitlick with 2.5 minutes to go, Obey Kubel with 1.5 minutes to go, and that sucks the wind out. You know, Florida's building is already quiet.
Right.
It's already empty. Flyers score one early. That sucks a lot of the energy out. And by the end of the first period, it felt like a Flyers home game because they score two late goals, and you only hear Flyers fans in the building basically for the rest of the game at that point.
Yeah, and not only was it a bounce-back game, but they had a bounce-back within the game that was very impressive as well.
Yes.
Because they're up 4-0 going into the third. You know, everything's, you know, all the gears are, everybody's hitting on all cylinders, all, you know, the gears are meshing, everything's great.
I didn't feel comfortable.
Florida scores that, you know, that one goal.
33 you know, seconds in. Yeah. Jonathan Huberdeau. Yeah.
It was one of those things that, okay, this gives them a chance for some momentum. The next 5 minutes are going to be important. And they were. And they score again.
4 minutes and 25 seconds later. So 4 minutes and 23 seconds later.
It's like, oh, crap, here we go. It's going to be, again, another Gene Hart reference. Buckle up your seats. It's going to be a bumpy ride.
Yeah, I wasn't comfortable at all.
No, not at all.
Up 4-0.
It was
Scott Laughton scored late in the second period, about 1 minute left. And I'll admit, I kind of breathed a little bit. I wasn't confident. I wasn't comfortable.
No, the way the game was going, 4-0, it felt like, unless something weird happens, which obviously happened early in the third period, this one's gonna be fairly easy. And it ended up being that way, but there wasn't an easy third period. They scored those two goals, make it 4-2. And you knew if they got three, they were getting 4-5. So you knew you had to stop it at 2. And either stop it at 2 or score again.
And Carter Hart made a save.
Terrific save.
I don't remember who it was on, but it was shortly after that Barkov goal, and it was on another one of their big guns. It was on Hoffman or Huberdeau. Or
I think it was Huberdeau. I think it was Huberdeau on a feed from Barkov.
Somebody came in, and Hart made the save.
Yep, huge save.
Brick walled the momentum.
Yep. Now, they scored that goal. There's every chance the Flyers lose that game in regulation. Right. It was that kind of steep, you know, decline that was going on at that moment.
That was a choke in waiting. Yeah, absolutely.
They stemmed the tide after that save. They played well for the next few minutes, and Florida didn't really have any more chances.
Yep.
We started to play in their zone.
5 minutes to go.
Yeah. Yep. Then we start to play in their zone. Then we get that fifth goal, and that was cancel Christmas.
And then who scored the sixth goal?
Was it
that would be
Aubin, was it?
Scoring his first career power play goal. It is once again elite sniper Robert Hagg with his second goal of the week.
Second goal
in a row. Where is he coming from? Remember how he was the odd man out on everybody's depth chart coming into the season?
Which I never really understood completely. I much prefer Hague to Ghost. I really do.
See, at this point, I would probably agree with you, but I wouldn't have said that at the beginning of the season.
You would say, that's a big deal for you.
But I wouldn't have said that at the beginning of the season.
Robert Hagg. Your Flyer glasses have gotten a little bit less orange. You're able to see a little bit more.
So I got to turn it back up.
You were ghost. And I'm not saying you hate him. I'm not saying that. You're seeing a little bit more of some of his shortcomings and what he can and cannot do.
The thing about Shane Gostisbehere was that, and I talked a couple weeks on this, a couple weeks ago on this show about the fact that I'm ready to trade him. And we had some conversations about what teams would make sense and where the fits would make sense. My thing with Shane Gostisbehere, I love him as a player. I love watching him handle the puck. I love watching him on the power play. I love watching him in the 3-on-3 overtime. I hate watching him in his own zone. I hate watching him whenever the other team is coming up the ice. And it feels to me kind of like Erik Karlsson felt in about 2013 when he was at his absolute peak offensively and just couldn't play defense. You remember that? Let me finish. You remember that being a big criticism of Erik Karlsson? And then Erik Karlsson kind of took a step back and kind of learned how to play defense a little bit? But before that, he was just a forward.
I don't think with Karlsson it was ever a lack of ability to play defense, though. It was the way he was playing the game. But go ahead.
Fine. But that's how it looks like Shane Gostisbehere's playing. And I don't think he has the skill to play defense if he wants to or whatever.
Not right now.
It looks like not only can he not, he doesn't even want to if he could. And to me, that's fine if you're producing 80, 90 points a season like Erik Karlsson is. But Shane Gostisbehere, what's he done? He's got like 12 points this season.
Yeah,
he hasn't had a good year.
His style of game does not lend itself to a bottom six defense. No. It just doesn't.
He needs to be on your top power play or in the press.
Yeah, he needs to be playing or not be on the bench. Not be dressed. One or the other. He can't. A 5-6 defensive guy is not. They're guys that keep the puck out of the net, not put the puck in the net.
Right.
And that's not him. So here's what I do.
That is Robert Hägg, generally speaking.
Yeah, absolutely. Here's what I do with Ghost. He's my seventh defenseman in case I have an injury and I have no choice but to put him in the game.
Right.
And for the rest of the season and the playoffs. And yeah, maybe get him some playing time here just to keep him fresh here and there. And then I tell him if I can't get anything of value for him at the deadline, and I'm not saying fair value, equal value. I'm talking if I can't get anything of value. Okay, I don't just give them away, but if I can't get something of value, the season comes, the season ends. At what
would
point
you trade
in time?
Him for, would you trade him for a third round pick?
No.
Okay, how about a second round pick?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so that's about where the line is. Okay.
Yeah. If I can get a 9 through 12 or an 8 through 12 forward, I would do it for sure. Especially if he
Tyler Pitlick.
Absolutely, something a little more depth, something like that. Something that's younger with some upside too, is that could always pan out because Ghost could always figure it out or do something I'm about to say.
And that's the thing I was always worried about.
I'm not worried about it anymore because it's probably not going to happen. Well,
and that's where I was going.
And here's the season comes and it ends, however it ends, playoffs, no playoffs, win around, whatever, the season's over. And the meetings at the end of the season, I go to Ghost, I'm Vigneault, and I say, look, here's the deal. Next year, come September, when you come in, if I don't see 15 pounds of muscle, you are getting traded. That's it. That's it. If you can't put the muscle on or are unwilling to put the muscle on to allow you to at least play passable hockey in your own zone and not get tossed around like a rag doll, or only get tossed around like a half a rag doll. You have to get bigger and stronger, and if you're not, you will not be on this team next year. And if he comes in and he's not 15 pounds of muscle heavier, then he doesn't want to play here, and you have to get rid of him. That's what I would do.
I don't think that's the correct way to handle it, because adding 15 pounds of muscle doesn't teach you how to play defense.
No, but it's not necessary that he doesn't know how to play defense. He doesn't physically have the ability to hold off other players. He doesn't. He doesn't have the physical ability to win the puck battle in the corner. He gets pushed off way too easy because he's too friggin' small.
I don't necessarily agree with that. As far as I'm concerned...
Then what's the issue with him? Why can't he be better in his own zone?
I don't think he has the hockey IQ to be the defenseman that you want him to be. I
don't think it's a mental thing. I think it's a totally physical tool thing. 100%.
But you see other small defensemen succeeding in this league. You know, Torrey Krug is about the same size as Shane Gostisbehere, about the same size. You see other guys who
watch
are small.
When he plays. Watch when Krug plays. And see if when he goes into the corner, he gets shoved off the puck as easily as Ghost.
Okay, that's fine.
And that's not a mental thing.
No, but he also knows how to move the puck before he gets himself pushed off it.
But no matter how much anticipation you have, no matter how much speed you play with, no matter how much vision you play with, at some point in time in games, there's two guys in the corner fighting for the puck. You're the guy that loses that battle, 90%
lose that.
You're going to lose it more often than you win it if you're the smaller guy, but you're not going to lose it 90% of the time. He loses it almost every single time.
If Connor McDavid goes into the corner with Zdeno Chara into the corner, guess who's coming out with the puck? It's not the Oilers. It's just not.
Those two in the corner, Char does not come out with the puck 90% of the time. He may come out 65. It's not 90-95. Ghost loses it 90% of the time, and that's just too much.
That can't be true. There's no way you have the number that Ghost loses that 90% of the time.
I watch the games. He never wins that battle. How can you win the battle when you're falling off when the guy hits you? How can you win the battle?
Okay, but he needs then. Okay, then in that case, he needs to recognize that it's going into the corner faster. That's a mental thing.
You can't.
And get him, or get himself out there faster. If physical is your thing, that's fine. Make him faster.
But if you play with too much anticipation, you're pulling yourself out of position. You got to at some point be able to play on the wall in your defensive end, and he just can't. He's got to get bigger.
If there's a chase after a loose puck in the corner, there's two kinds of players. There's the kind of player that's going to race there and try to chip it through, or the player that's going to try to pin up and gum and strength win possession there. Shane Gostisbehere is not the kind of guy who's going to board play himself and try to win the puck free in his feet.
He's the guy who's going to get there first because
I want him to get there first and chop it out. He shouldn't even be in that scrum in the corner that he has to win in the first place.
You can't always be the first guy to the puck. You can't. Nobody's that good.
You're just going to lose puck battles. If he gained 15 pounds of muscle, it's not going to magically make him win that battle more.
Yes, it will. Yeah, it most certainly will.
No, because the guys he's smaller than, he's 50 pounds smaller and 6 inches shorter than.
It's not a 15-pound difference. It's not all about pounds. Okay, it's
then
about strength.
Why do you want him to add 15 pounds?
Because of the strength that it's going to add. He's got to get stronger in the legs. He's got to get stronger up top. If he's stronger, he's going to be physically harder to play against.
Regardless, he didn't play at all this week, and Robert Hagg scored 2 goals. So let's go back to talking about the actual team, the guys they're actually.
It was a great week for Hagg. I think he now has 4 goals or 3 goals.
Three. So one more thing about Shane Gostisbehere. We did talk about his injury a little bit. The Elian Vigneault has come out, and they've talked about the possibility and the likelihood that he'll end up in Lehigh Valley at least for a little bit on a conditioning stint.
I'm surprised it hasn't happened already.
I don't think he's ready. I think him coming in against in that game last week.
He tweaked whatever he had.
He definitely wasn't ready. They definitely pushed him. He has suffered a setback, and if he's going to be traded, it doesn't look like he's going to be healthy enough to trade by the deadline. So that is relevant. And it looks like Shane Gostisbehere is going to be on this team through the remainder of this season, at least.
If you can't get any kind of value for him, then there's no reason to trade him. But
no, and I don't mind having him as an option in a playoff series.
Right.
Because he's a better defensive replacement than, say, Mark Friedman, who would probably be your first alternate in that situation.
Yeah, I'm not even sure of that either, but... Here's the kind of team that's going to trade for Ghost is not, I don't believe, the kind of team that's looking to make a cup run or a playoff push.
You think he's a future piece?
Yeah, I think it's so. I don't think the injury is going to stop you from trading him.
Well, I'm just talking about by the deadline. The fact that he's literally not going to be healthy enough to trade by the deadline.
So am I. I think a team that deals for him is a kind of guy. It's the kind of team that needs defensive help so much so that.
They'll trade for him at the draft.
They're not in a playoff position anyway, and they're looking at a guy who hopefully can be a top four guy if he makes some changes or figures some things out.
Well, I'm looking at it as hopefully you can move him before the trade deadline so you can then use his cap space to bring a forward back, bring another piece back. For example, let's say Arizona decides they're not going to make it. Let's say they decide they're going to fall short this year and that their experiment is a failure because they're only a couple points away from being out of playoff contention because the Pacific is insane. Let's say they fall
and the bottom's falling out for them a little bit, which we couldn't really figure out where they were to begin with and how there even was a bottom to fall out. So
let me run something by you. What do you have to add to Shane Gostisbehere to get expiring UFA Taylor Hall from Arizona? How does that sound? Because the numbers are, I believe the contract numbers are fairly similar. I know Ghost makes about 4.5. Taylor Hall is somewhere similar.
He's unrestricted, right?
He will be an unrestricted free agent. This would be a pure rental, yeah.
Yeah, I think the cost is just going to be prohibitive. How do they not want Ghost and a one?
I'm sorry?
How do they not want Ghost and a one for Hall?
I mean, I would do that.
You
wouldn't do Ghost and a one for...
Had to have him for a month and a half?
I would consider it, man.
I wouldn't.
Dude, Shane Gostisbehere's not playing.
I do Ghost. and a pick, but not a, how do you give up a one for a guy you're going to have for a month and a half?
Because Taylor Hall,
I don't love him to begin with.
Man, I think Taylor Hall puts you in the conversation. I'm talking the conversation.
I don't know
for sure. By the way, Taylor Hall is making $6 million. But there's plenty of ways that you can play with that number.
Yeah, to me, he's one of those guys.
The salaries are close enough that they can make it work.
Yeah, that's true. But to me, he's one of those guys that can't figure out. One? No, I don't give up the one. I'll drive close to the airport, but I don't give up a one. I don't give up just a one.
I would do Shane Gostisbehere and a one for Taylor Hall. And I will say that, and that might be controversial. People might not like that.
Yeah, I don't know if I would do that if he was under contract for next year. I don't love Hall. He's a guy who I don't see where he's really figured out how to play winning hockey yet.
Okay, so you take your shot with a guy who won the MVP 18 months ago.
I guess two years ago.
Wait. You take your shot. Worst case scenario, it doesn't work out. You lost a guy that you didn't want on your roster anyway. You lose one first round pick. That's it. And you get
that first round pick could be.
You get Ghost's cap space in addition. Taylor Hall walks at the end of the year. That's $6 million is gone. Fine. You still have the cap space that you got by trading away Ghost.
Yeah, but that number, if you look around the league, some incredible, like insane number, 85% of the players who are in the league were either a first or second round pick.
Okay.
So you're giving up a guy that more often than not is going to be a member of your team. Now, whether he becomes a star or Scott Laughton is...
You know, do the Flyers need major improvement in the next 5 years?
At the forward position.
Do they?
Yeah.
I don't necessarily agree with that.
Yeah, no, there's still... And that's one thing I wanted to touch on today. The one takeaway for me... as you know, going into the season, we said this cannot be a failure. You're either going to find out it was coaching.
You're going to figure out what you are.
Exactly. And I think the more this season plays out, the more you see, as much as Vigneault is a very good, there's a terrific coach and has them playing the right way.
I think you're about to say something I firmly disagree with.
They're not close yet to winning the cup, and they're not good enough yet to be a good team. They're maxing out, but they need more. They clearly need more.
I don't necessarily disagree with you. I agree that they are pretty close to maxing out.
What we mean by maxing out is that their point total matched their talent level is where it should be.
I know what you mean.
Or even above. Their point total is above where their talent level is even.
Each player, for the most part, each player is playing roughly to where we expect them.
Correct.
To be.
And that's all Vigneault, obviously.
Yes. I would argue that this team is a cup contender if it's 100% healthy. And I don't even mean 100% healthy in the way that no team is ever 100% healthy. I mean, if you don't lose your leading scorer at the time for the year in November, if you don't lose your second overall pick from two seasons ago for the whole season.
I don't mean to sound insensitive in any way, shape, or form, and I hope it doesn't come out that way. It was a very short period for Oscar. And again, Oscar, I hope everything's great. But let's not say he was going to be a top three forward on this team that was going to make a cup run. He had leaps and bounds to still make to become that player.
I understand that.
We miss him desperately. And again, hopefully within a year, he's 100% healthy and we're rooting for him again. And I want all that. And I think he clearly helps us to get where we want to go. He's certainly, I think, in a piece. But let's not pretend, you know, that he's Blake Wheeler or you know, one of those guys that can help you make a deep run.
No, but wherever he is in this lineup, and we've seen this lineup, we'll talk about the Tampa game. We've seen this lineup play pretty balanced, where each line is getting, please. I let you do your thing.
Okay.
Each line is getting pretty roughly even ice time, roughly. You know, obviously, Claude Drew is going to play more than Tyler Pitlick, but, you know.
I want to see more of the fourth line, but go ahead.
Right. Me too. Wherever Oscar Lindblom and Nolan Patrick slot in on this team, it makes those lines better. whoever, if they're better than the person they replace, Nolan Patrick is a better hockey player than Connor Bunneman. I'm sorry, Connor Bunneman, you've been fine. Nolan Patrick is better at hockey than you, and having him in the lineup would make the team better.
Having two top 6-7 forwards come back to your lineup can't help but make your team better. That's not what I'm saying, okay? I didn't say it didn't. What I'm saying is you're not saying this team can be better, or this team, if it was fully healthy, could be better. You're saying if they were fully healthy, they can compete for the Stanley Cup. Those are two vastly different things.
That's what I'm saying.
Those are two vastly different things. This team is nowhere near deep enough the way Boston is, the way Washington is, the way Tampa is. I mean, they're just not. They're just not.
Boston's not really that deep.
Sure they
really?
Are.
Really? Sure no, they're not.
Sure they
have their top line.
I know they're top
heavy. They have a bunch of solid players.
Every team that's that good is top heavy because their top lines are so good, they're going to play extra minutes.
Okay, let's pick a middle six guy on Boston.
Sure.
Jake DeBrusque.
Mm-hmm.
Do the Flyers have more than three players that are better than Jake DeBrusque? Probably.
But he's not a top three.
I understand that.
You're saying after the Flyers' top three, do we have three players better than DeBrusque?
Probably.
No.
Really?
I don't believe so.
And you're taking
probably their sixth, their worst forward of their second line.
Okay, fine.
Krejci's a terrific player.
Okay, let's do centers then. Krejci is their second best center. How would you compare him to Kevin Hayes?
He's better. He's clearly better. I love Kevin Hayes. Don't get me wrong.
I think 5 years ago you had an argument.
And you're
David
also,
Krejci is not in his prime.
You're also giving Hayes credit for being their second center when there's large parts of the season he hasn't really played as their second best center.
Exactly.
Or not like, you know, just the way that for slotting purposes, I'm not saying he wasn't playing well enough to be considered their second best center.
Well, right. That's what I'm saying. Uh-huh. Is like the Flyers are close, and I've said it before, the Flyers can compete with any team in the league.
They do.
And the league is so close that an upgrade like Connor Bunneman to Nolan Patrick is the kind of difference that can get you six extra points in a season.
Yeah, but that's different than okay,
or
you
win
can
you an extra playoff
Stanley
game.
Cup.
It is. Because the league is so tight. That kind of move, and then whoever you think the Flyers' worst winger is, sub them out for healthy Oscar Lindblom. Even if he's not your top scorer, even if he's not a 40-goal scorer like he was on pace for, even if he falls into kind of second, third line, scores 30, because he was almost guaranteed to score 30 the way he was scoring, that guy helps you win the cup.
Not as they're currently made up. I just don't say they don't have enough talent outside of the crease to get there. Okay. The only way this team has made up and without Konechny or Oscar coming back healthy and being
Patrick
turning into
Konechny
that.
Konechny has been healthy, knock on wood.
That 100 point, 110, 100, even 20 point guy. We don't have that guy emerge. Okay. And this lineup stays intact for the next 3 or 4 years. You know, obviously every team gets tweaked, but if it stays intact as a core, The only way this team competes for a Stanley Cup is if the guy in the crease becomes your elite player. He turns into, you know, the next Price, the next Binnington. I'll even go shorter. You know, I won't use Roy and Brodeur because that's insane. But just become, you know, the next guy who's the next great goalie. And look, and I know it's not a name that everybody, you know, wants to consider as a great goalie just yet, but because it's such a short period of time, Binnington's been that guy. They won the cup because he played. You may not put him as an elite player yet because of the time period that he's played, so short. He's been that good. They do not win the cup without him being who he was.
No, he was great last year, and he absolutely
helped them. And he's been great this year again.
Yeah, and I wasn't a believer in Jordan Binnington.
Neither was I. I thought it was a total fluke.
Right. Last season, I'm like, wow, this guy's like 25 and he's just getting a shot. What's the deal?
Yep.
It's not like St. Louis has had some stud goalie that he's been stuck behind forever. What's he doing? And then last year he comes out and plays 32 games, has a 189 goals against and a 927 save, and then plays absolutely stellar in the playoffs. This year he hasn't been quite as good.
Well, you can't be. Nobody can be that good.
Well, he's been over a career. He's been basically league average this season. 41 games, 274 goals against with a 909 save. It's fine. It's solid. It's not spectacular.
I thought that team would be a six seed this year. I thought they would fall back to normal. You know, they wouldn't fall back to last place where they were before they got it, before he came up.
The thing about last year's Blues team, sorry to cut you off here.
That's okay.
The thing about last year's Blues team, they were the worst team in the league and then the best team in the league.
And they had one change.
Right.
Bennington was the they also
changed their coach, for the record. So there's that. Yeah, because they fired Mike Yeo and then hired Craig Berube.
Berube, right, yeah.
So they did do that.
Sure.
Binnington was the reason they won that cup.
Yeah.
Firmly.
So
this,
I'm using that as to draw the analogy to the Flyers. Unless Hart becomes that guy, I think our players outside the crease are comparable. I think the Blues are a little deeper. Especially on the defensive end, they're a little deeper.
I think the Flyers are a little deeper more on the talented up front.
Forward. I agree. So when you put those two things together, I think the lineups are comparable outside the crease.
Yeah. Has Hart shown you yet
you're going to make cup runs with this guy?
Yeah. Yep.
They're back to being fully orange again.
Yeah, totally.
The glasses are fully orange. He just hasn't been that guy yet. He just hasn't.
I had a conversation with my father over this past week, and I know he listens to this show, so forgive me if I tell this story wrong. We had a conversation, and I basically told him why I think Carter Hart is already... I don't want to say he's one of the best goalies in the league, but he's starting to get close to that conversation at 21 years old.
Based on what?
Because I have watched him play impressive hockey, not all the time. For the most part, he is very good. And I have also seen just the absolute professionalism in him. Every time he has a bad game, he comes out, he talks about it, he owns it. He has no problem talking about what he needs to improve. He is entirely open about his relationship with a sports psychologist, and he's trying to, you know, make that supremely healthy, because it's supremely healthy to talk about that sort of thing. He's acknowledging that he's getting mental help, and he not even necessarily, you know, because he has any sort of mental disorder, just because he wants his mind to feel correct.
Yeah, it's his version of guys like Jordan and Kobe going into the gym when they miss the shot to lose the game
a million times,
and in the gym I'm going to hit the shot exactly a million times, so that the next time. So it's the equivalent of, you know, the 90% of the goal. Well, not 90,
and
but
I'm sorry,
a majority of a play.
Who
were
those players you
mental.
Just mentioned? Who yeah. are those players you just mentioned? Legends.
I said what he's doing is the equivalent of that. I didn't say he's them.
I understand.
Okay. Now, I don't disagree with anything you said.
Like, he's thinking like the elite.
Absolutely,
think.
Absolutely. And I agree with everything you said about his bounce back. He has the physical tools. He is only 21. But hidden in what you said is every time he has a bad game, he bounces back. There's only one reason you know that.
Because he's 21 years old.
No. The reason you notice it is because he's having too many bad games.
Sure.
Okay.
And I expect those holes to close up as he matures.
So do I, but you can't say they're going to. You can't say 100% they're going to.
I'm confident that the holes are going to.
So am I, but that's different than he's going to be the elite goaltender who leads teams to Stanley Cup finals and hopefully win one or two. That's different. I've seen nothing in him to suggest he can't be our guy for the next 10, 15 years. I'm supremely confident he will be. I love everything about his makeup. I love everything about what he brings to the game. But I have not seen enough yet in his year plus here to say this is definitely who this guy's going to be this, and this. Hextall,
I have.
Hextall, his first year, his first 80, how many games has Hart played now? Has he played 60, 65 games? Has he played a whole?
Probably a little more than that.
I think he's played a whole season's worth of games.
Yeah.
Not 80. I'm talking about, you know, you play 65, 60 out of 80 or whatever. Right. Hextall's rookie year and his first and his second year, you clearly saw this guy's going to be a great goalie for 10, 15 years. And he was. And I don't, you just haven't seen that yet. You've seen it at times out of Hart. You saw it all the time, 8-9 games out of 10 from Hextall. You saw it in the playoffs. You know, if there was a 7-game series, he was great. 5 of them, good one, okay one. If it was, you know, 6-game series, he was terrific. 4, good one, okay one. He was consistently great all the time.
You know how we just talked about Jordan Binnington mm-hmm. and how he has a 247 and a 909?
Mm-hmm.
Carter Hart has a 259 and a 906. Fairly similar numbers.
Okay.
Okay. So he's played solid this season, right? If you're talking about how good Jordan Binnington has been,
yeah, no, I'm not saying you have to put
Carter Hart there too.
I'm not saying Hart's been bad this season. I'm saying he's been a little bit inconsistent.
In addition to the overall solid play, I have seen him make spectacular plays with relative frequency. There are a lot of really good Carter Hart saves. For me personally, it's the 5-on-3 against Taylor Hall, but that's just me. A lot of people have different favorites. He's made some stellar high-end hockey plays.
He has.
And
100%.
So in my head, in how I'm looking at Carter Hart, I see a guy who is 21 years old with all the talent in the world. He's already realized a large portion of his potential. He's knocking.
Agreed.
He's knocking on the door to the next level, and he is already occasionally peeking into the next level. And also, on top of all of that, he is the most mentally stable goalie I've ever seen in my life.
I would agree mentally in one way, as far as his ability to put things behind him.
He is the coolest man on earth.
But the mental approach to the game of being in, one of the strongest things about him is his ability to play positionally terrific hockey.
Correct.
My issue with it at times is he doesn't do it. There's too many times, especially on the road, and I think that'll all work out, but there's too many times, yesterday's game included, where he's the positioning's just off. And I think he tempers the anticipation game that he plays versus the physical game that he plays a little bit. Like the first goal in Tampa yesterday, it was an opportunity bounce back to Killorn, I believe it was, who tried to make a pass through, and the puck ended up actually bouncing back to him, and he had a tiny little spot on the short side that Hart was leaving to go with the pass, okay? And again, that's his anticipation game. He was going – if the pass makes it through and he makes that incredible save, it's because, wow, tremendous anticipation.
Right.
Okay. But that anticipation took him away from the play and left the short side open that really shouldn't have been open.
Right. Okay? And that's
that balancing act that he'll figure out as he plays more, I do believe. But he's not there yet.
In my eyes, the holes are small enough and relatively easily patchable enough. His game is very sound just on a fundamental level. I think the holes are small enough and easily fixable enough, and he's so confident and so cool and so composed that I trust that they will be, because he seems like a perfectionist.
I don't disagree with that. I think so too, but you're putting it out there that it certainly will, and you can't say that yet.
Sure, I can.
No, you can believe it, but you're putting it to a point that you're saying 100% this will guarantee definitely happen, and we're gonna win cups with him as our best player.
Is Connor McDavid gonna have 100 points next year?
Most likely.
Yes, I will say yes.
Unless he breaks his ankle and misses 20 games.
Fine. If Carter Hart breaks his ankle and misses 20 games, we're in bigger trouble anyway. I refuse to play the what-if game when it comes to injuries. This is what this player is going to do. Yes, of course, he could get injured tomorrow and his career could be over.
How many points does McDavid have now?
80. I think he's third in the league at 81. Let me pull it up real quick. He is third in the league at 81.
So he's on pace for what, 110?
Far more than that. 125. Something along those lines. Draisaitl has 92. Draisaitl has a 10-point lead, by the way.
Wow.
Oh, I'm sorry. McDavid might not hit 100 because he's injured. I don't know if you remember hearing that.
It's why Draisaitl has the lead on him that he has. But
Right.
But still, how many games has he played?
55.
And he has how many points?
82.
So he's going at a 1.3 point per game pace, which is 80 plus 25.
110. Yeah, 110-ish.
How can you say a guy who's going to be on pace to score 110 this year over an 80-game pace will 100% have 100 points next year?
Because he's 23 years old and the best player in the world. Yes, I can.
No, you can't say 100%.
He's 23 years old and the best player in the world. Yes, I can.
He's certainly not the best player in the world yet. That's just not true.
He certainly is the best player. Is this what we're going to argue about this week?
Okay. He's one of the most talented, and you maybe can argue he's the most talented player in the world. Don't tell me he's better. He's not the best player in the world. I can name 10 players I would rather have right now over him to win the Stanley Cup this year right now.
You know why I can bet that Connor McDavid's going to score 100 points next year? His rookie year, he only played 45 games. He had 48 points.
That's not 100-point pace.
I understand. And then he had 100, 108, and 116 the last three seasons. This season, he's got 55 games played, 81 points, is on pace for over 100, as we just established. So, yeah, I'm going to take pretty decent odds that Connor McDavid scores 100 points next year.
I didn't say he's not likely or even probable or even most likely to. You said it's a guarantee. I said, no, it's not.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen. Yes. Could he get hurt and his career is over? Sure. Same with Carter Hart.
He could play 80 games and not score 100 points. I'm not saying it's likely to happen.
Any one of us could go outside tomorrow and get hit by a bus. No, I understand that's how it works.
No, I said he could play 80 games and not score 100 points.
That's not going to happen.
I don't think so either. But you say these things like they're 100%
foolproof. They are.
They're not.
They are.
They're not. They're not. They're not. It's why you play the games, because nothing's certain.
Carter Hart.
You've been playing too many simulation leagues.
Carter Hart is going to win a Vezina trophy by the time he turns 30.
He's certainly better.
If he doesn't, you heard it here first.
If he doesn't, then we were all wrong, and he's not the guy that we've been searching for the last 20 years.
We have gone supremely off the rails. Before we get out of here, I'm just going to cut this conversation off at the knees. Before we get out of here, let's talk briefly about the upcoming week.
It's a big week. Again, we have to do what we did last week with Florida.
Right. Let me set this up.
We have to put Columbus in the rearview mirror a little bit. Go ahead.
Let me set this up. Columbus plays this afternoon at time of recording against the New Jersey Devils.
But we've played the same number of games, so it'll give us a game in hand, so I don't think it's quite as important.
It's not a big deal.
But, yeah. Exactly.
And it's the Devils. They're bad. It's fine. Tuesday, Thursday, we get the Columbus Blue Jackets. Tuesday in Philadelphia. Thursday in Columbus. The Flyers also play Winnipeg on Saturday, but that game absolutely falls to the wayside because you have a playoff series with Columbus,
yep.
Basically. If you're going to win the game in regulation. If you're going to lose the game, try to take it to overtime. But getting at least 3 points in these four games is a huge, huge, huge deal. 1-0-1 in these two games is the bare minimum.
Correct.
In my mind.
It puts them behind us. It doesn't put them in the rear view the way we put Florida in the rear view. Right. If you 2-0 those games, that is gigantic.
If you jump up four clean points on the Columbus Blue Jackets at this point in the season, that's a devastating blow to this team because now they have to start jumping teams, and they get down in the realm of like Florida, where now they're fighting with Florida.
It's demoralizing.
It crushes them. Right. These two games are enormous. We're going to see a lot of John Tortorella. We're going to see a lot where the Flyers are going to get their first taste. I believe their first taste of Elvis Merzlikins, who all of a sudden is a Calder candidate.
Yeah, it's crazy how good
with the numbers
playing.
He's played 25 games, and his numbers are obscene. Like, his numbers are you talked about, we talked earlier about hot goalies. Binnington last year. These guys who just steal a season. Elvis Merzlikins is stealing a season for the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Yeah.
There's no reason they should be in the playoff conversation. They're tied with the Flyers with the exact same number of games played, both 71 points in the Eastern Conference wild card. But there's no reason they should be. Over the offseason, they lost Duchesne. No. They lost Panarin. They lost Bobrovsky. And they're better. They have more points than they had last year before they added those guys.
Understood. Tortorelli's doing a hell of a job there, without a doubt. They still have huge problems scoring.
Yes.
That's their biggest. If you look at his stats, he's 12-8-5, I believe, Elvis.
Yeah.
And he has 5 shutouts.
Yeah.
You have 5 shutouts and only 12 wins.
It's insane.
Okay, that's, you know.
This is a goalie dragging a team to the playoffs.
Right, and this is a guy with a .930 save percentage, and he's 12-8. I mean,
you want to talk about Carter Hart putting this team on his back? Let him have a conversation with Elvis Merzlikins about putting a team on your back. Because this man has done it like no goalie, maybe in history, at the very least in quite a while. Jonathan Quick dragging the Kings to that cup comes up.
Cups.
But specifically the first one
is the most impressive one because really nobody knew who he was yet.
And like nobody knew who Drew Doughty was really.
But he did it for all 3.
Yeah, it's insane.
Or were they two? They might have been 2, I'm sorry.
But that's what Elvis Merzlikins is doing this year. And I mean, it sounds silly, but the key is beating them.
Yeah. We gotta make Elvis leave the building.
Right. Oh, Jesus. I'm sure it's happened. I'm sure that's not the first time that joke's been said.
I'm sure it's not.
But either way, assuming he plays both these games, because I imagine he's probably going to, right? John Tortorella is running out Elvis Merzlikins for both of these games.
You would think. Well, is the other guy, is Kiprasalo, is that how, if I'm saying his name right? Is he healthy?
I don't know if Kiprasalo is healthy.
I don't think he is.
Elvis Merzlikins is from, I think it's Latvia.
Latvia, yeah.
The other backup goalie is also from Latvia.
What are the odds of that?
It's insane. Let me.
I got a good trivia question for you before we go. But go ahead.
Yeah. But either way, I assume we're going to be seeing Merzlikins here.
I would think if it was back to back nights, maybe not. But I think you're going to get Hart versus Merzlikins twice.
His name is Mattis Kivlinikes. I apologize, Mattis, for mispronouncing your name. Kivlenikes.
Yeah, they got some crazy names in Latvia.
Yeah.
Obviously.
So either way, that's their goalie situation. These two games are gonna feel like a playoff game. They're like playoff games, and they should.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really looking forward to it.
Tuesday night, I expect Wells Fargo Center to be loud. I expect Wells Fargo Center to be packed. I really, really hope the fan base realizes how important this game is.
I think they do. And I think they will. They're not an uninformed fan base.
No, and that is one thing I do like about the Philadelphia fan base.
As a whole, all 4 sports, they're very informed. Sure. You know, there's things that happen all the time. Nothing's jumping into my head as an example right now, but there are things that happen all the time that fan reaction goes a certain way, and you're like, wow, these fans really know what they're talking about.
My reaction, or my go-to example at this point was the crowd in the building during the 5-on-3 against the Devils. I was there, and the crowd knew how big of a penalty kill that was without anybody having to say it. It was late in the second period. The Flyers were up by, I think, 2. The Devils were getting a 5-on-3. And the fans knew how important it was. Hart made that insane save on Hall. And then after that, every time the Flyers cleared it, the crowd got louder. And it just crescendoed and crescendoed and crescendoed. And when the penalty ended, the place blew.
Right. Actually, one came to mind. When you watch the playoff game, the Phillies, with the Brett Myers.
Brett Myers at bat. Yeah, that's legendary.
The crowd clearly realized what was going on and the importance of
Brett Myers was nine pitches deep. With every foul ball, they got louder and louder
with every foul ball.
Bartolo Colon?
No, I think it was CC.
CC. And then eventually he walked them.
He
right?
walked them, and then
and the place went ballistic.
Correct, and then grand slam. But,
well, you Which, guys can
the grand slam. Is, the grand slam is what makes you remember how of important course. It was. But yeah, but the walk happened first.
Well, you guys can let us know what you think the Flyers are going to do against the Columbus Blue Jackets on Tuesday and Thursday. You can do that on Twitter.
I'm going to jump in for 1 second because, like I said, I had a trivia question for you.
Can we do it after the plugs?
Oh, absolutely. I'm okay. Sorry.
Let us know on Twitter at YWT Podcast. You can also find the show on Facebook, Instagram, Podbean, iTunes, Google Podcast, Spotify, SportsTalkPhilly.com. We're all over the place. You know where Mike's at. You know where producer Mike's at. Make sure to get at them and talk to them about these two major series. All right, hit me with this trivia question.
The 1974 Flyers, and I didn't believe this, so I looked it up.
Is this 73, 74, 70, the first cup team?
74, 75.
74, 75.
That okay. team has done, that team did something that has not been done since. Probably, and probably will never be done again.
Was that 35 game unbeaten streak?
No, that was 79.
No, that was in,
that was the 79 team that lost to the Islanders in the finals. Yeah. That was my guess. That was, I told the person who asked me the question, are you sure you don't mean 1979? He's right. like, no, 74, 75. FYI, you'll never get it. But go ahead.
Okay, it's a team accomplishment.
Yes.
You don't sound very sure about
well,
that
because
does it have to do with drinking beer? Because I have a feeling
it's a legit thing. It's not a statistical thing, but it's a legit. You know, again, you'll never get it. So
the best record against playoff teams.
No.
I don't know. Okay, hit me with it. I don't know.
They were the last team in the history of hockey to win.
Wait. Was this no player wore a helmet?
No.
Oh, okay.
Something along, not unsimilar.
All right,
they
go
were
for
the,
it.
They were the last team in hockey where every player who got his name on the Stanley Cup as a part of the team who played for the team was from Canada.
Huh.
Every single player.
Interesting.
No team since 1974-75 can make that claim.
Okay, I thought maybe it might have been the helmet thing because no. I know guys right, started right. kind of wearing them. They started
Correct.
Popping up.
Yeah, that wasn't a bad guess.
Okay.
And the person told me that, I was like, no way, that's impossible. And I looked it up
and it's true. Well, there you go. Canada, you are welcome.
That will never happen
probably
again.
Probably never going to happen
no,
again.
No, 51% of the players are not from Canada
definitely
anymore.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
No.
They're under 50% now, so no shot
well,
ever.
Unless Don Cherry gets his own team, then it might happen. And on that note, we're going to get out of here. We'll be back next week. Sundays at 8. That's generally when we go live. And until then, we'll see you next week.